Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Coach, and welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B. This is episode 224, and today we are talking with my guest, Curtis Hewson, about collaborative team meetings. This is part of our Developing a Coaching Action Plan mini-series because I wanted to give you some tools to work with your school as a whole, big picture stuff, and kind of help you create a plan that would attack everything that is needed at the whole group level, differentiated team meetings, and individual coaching. If you need help with that, head to buzzingwithmissb.com/action plan and get the free action plan guide. It's a little mini series, email video series that comes to your inbox. And it also gives you a really nice handout that you can use to plan out your action plan. Or you can get the whole action plan toolkit in my TPT store. Just search for Chrissy Beltran and then look for action plan toolkit. We're going to welcome Curtis to the podcast to get started with our topic today. So let's welcome Curtis to the podcast. Welcome.
Hi there, Chrissy. Great to be with you. Thank you so much for the invite.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here today. I'd love for people to get to know you a little better. So as a quick way to introduce yourself, if you could tell us a couple of things. Who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
Well, I help anyone who is there to help kids. Primarily, that is with school leaders and system leaders to be able to create systems, to create robust systems of collaboration within their schools so that then those working closest to students have mechanisms to be able to collaborate effectively, to work together. I firmly believe that the most critical resource that we have in education are the individuals working closest to the child, i.e. the teachers, the paraprofessionals. And I think our role as leaders is to create opportunities for sharing, collaboration, support, and reduction of isolationism for those individuals. So that's what I do now, is come in, help support, help set up robust systems of collaboration. We refer to it as collaborative response, and then to be there to help as schools put this process or this framework into place to be able to respond to as many needs of students while also building the collective capacity of the staff at the same time.
I love that dual focus.
Mm-hmm.
My next question is a question that I've been asking this season. I'm on a mission to share hobbies with coaches. I feel like we spend so much time with our schools, we don't always do things for ourselves. So what is a hobby that you love to do?
Well, it's going to feed a further stereotype, but I am Canadian. And so anything hockey related is fantastic. I play, I watch, enjoy our favorite teams, both my wife and I. That's one. In the summer, golf and lots of time outside. And then most critically is time with family and those that are closest to me. Just, I love being with those that I love. I don't know if that's considered the same type of hobby as stamp collecting, but it's where my time goes when I'm not committed to work.
I think it counts. I think if that isn't a hobby, then a lot of us don't have a hobby.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay. So what I would love to get started with is the ideas of collaborative team meetings, distributed coaching. Can you talk a little bit about these ideas and just give us an introduction?
Yeah. Can I back it up just a little bit to give just a quick reference here? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to talk about a collaborative team meeting, but understand that this is one part of what we refer to as a collaborative response framework. And we often say to schools, the work's not a program. It's not something you get trained on. It's a way of thinking. It's a way of thinking in your school about how do we collaboratively respond. And that may seem, well, isn't that obvious? Isn't that what we don't or what we do all the time? And I would argue it's not. I don't think schools in many ways collaborate to the best of our abilities. And I think there's a lot of expertise that goes untapped within schools. So collaboratively responding is what we're trying to achieve. And the collaborative team meeting is key to that. So in our framework, we talk about four layers of team. And this formulates one of our core foundational components, which is collaborative structures and processes. I believe every school needs strong collaborative structures and processes. The second foundational component is data and evidence. Do you have information that's informing those conversations? And then the third is a continuum of supports. Have we clearly articulated what we will do when students struggle? So, going into that first component of the collaborative structures and processes, four layers of team. I'll take you back to our school in the mid 2000s. We had grade level teams. They operated very much in alignment with PLC type work, where teams were examining data, they were establishing a goal, they were working towards that, they were trying things in the classroom, coming back. What have we noticed? What's our next step? Those were working. Then we also had what we would later come to refer to as our third layer of team, the school support team. So myself as principal, assistant principal, a learning support teacher, and a family school wellness liaison, kind of consider your specialists or your special ed side of things. Every week, the four of us would meet and determine who are the students that are being referred, who are the ones that need support beyond the classroom, what do we do? Do we go back and help support the teachers further? Do we accelerate it to a referral? And then there were often times in the school where we'd say, okay, we need to talk about this one kid and let's get all the right players around the table. This came our fourth layer. And what we were finding is sometimes the PLC work, which we now call collaborative planning, because we see schools subscribing to professional learning communities. We also see other collaborative structures that are meant to serve the same purpose. But that collaborative planning is intended to be, what are we doing to look at our instructional practices and make adjustments to impact all learners? Our grade level teams sometimes were engaged in work that wasn't necessarily responsive to what we were seeing in the class. So, a real simple example, you'd have a grade one team working on really robust writing consistencies across classrooms and using common writing prompts and then getting student work and creating exemplars for that and creating it so that students could start to measure their own work against that. But when you were in the classrooms, you'd go, oh my goodness, the primary thing that we're experiencing right now is a lack of executive functioning. The work that teachers are doing is good work, but it's not necessarily what's getting in their way from day to day. And then when you looked at our data, you go, actually, our kids are not that bad of writers to begin with. And then our other layers of team were getting overloaded. We felt like there were so many times where it was a reality of our system, but it felt like a teacher would say, I've done everything, here you go. And it would feel like a handoff to us. And again, it's a reality of the system. We had not of the great people that were doing all that they could for kids, but we were getting overwhelmed. And the work that was happening there was in no way collaborative. Lots of times, again, it was what we were finding is even in a small school, the answer might lie two doors away, but we didn't have mechanisms to help elicit that effectively. So that's a very long way of getting to the collaborative team meeting. The collaborative team meeting became the second layer, and it's what we've seen as foundational to exploring students and lead to this distributive coaching concept that I'll get to here in a little bit. The collaborative team meeting, highly structured. It requires facilitation, at least initially. In time, we can see school or teams that are self-sufficient once they learn the process. Highly structured, we have things like norms in place, meeting roles. People come ready with the students that there's a pre-meeting organizer that they have filled in. There's nothing left to chance within this conversation as far as the structure goes. But then it starts like this, Chrissy. We would go, and once we've had a quick chance to review norms, pick one that we'll focus in on today. You're going to say to me, so Curtis, who's a student you've brought to celebrate? And we often set that there's an overarching focus. So if our school has said we're really trying to move the needle on literacy, well, literacy might be our overall focus. Or if lots of schools during COVID said student well-being, that's our primary focus. Okay, so come with a student in mind of our overarching focus. You ask me for a celebration, and I say, I have Tyrone, and I've really been impressed with the growth I've seen in his letter recognition. He had great difficulty with Oh, at least 15 of the 26 letters, just recognizing which they were, let alone sounds. He's up to 24 and 26 on most days. It's incredible growth. Now, what you do as the facilitator is say, that's awesome. What did you do that led to that success? And the others in the room have the opportunity for to listen when I start to share, here's some strategies I've tried, here's what I've learned. I put down that, the use of visual anchors within the room has been great, but I started to put different pictures based on student interest level. So I've actually got pictures. Tyrone is a skateboarder. He loves skateboarding. So I've got little skateboarding things on there. And T was a letter he was struggling with before. I've got trucks, skateboard trucks. Only he knows what those set of wheels means, but it works really well. Now, someone in that room is going to go, for me, it's not that big of a deal. It's something I use. Someone in that room is going to go, that's genius. I love that idea. Then, once we've had that little bit of celebration time, it's 5, 10 minutes, depending on the amount of time that you have. Then we launch into a really specific process, and people get really excited when they see this. And it was honed through a lot of years of evolution, because it used to be, I've brought this kid, here's my issue, here's my concerns, and we'd all problem solve, but it would be around one kid, and I'd be at the table, and everyone in the room would be saying, Curtis, you should, you should, you should. And I can sometimes get overwhelmed with that, or defensive, or, oh, I've already tried that. No, that wouldn't work for this kid. Here's what this looks like. We say, all right, Curtis, who's a student that you've brought? Name only, and what's a key issue that you're experiencing? And so let's again assume that our overarching focus is numeracy this time. And I say, I have Michelle, and my key issue is processing multi-step problems. Stop. Now, a facilitator might ask, describe to us what you mean by that. What does that look like? Do you think it's a language comprehension issue, or is it logical thinking? And I say, no, the language is not the problem here. It's understanding step one, step two, step B. So we say, all right, key issue is thinking through steps when solving multi-step problems, or sequential thinking when solving multi-step problems. And then we say, Chrissy, do you have a student, just a name, that also you also see that? And you say, yeah, add Tanisha to that list. And another person says, yeah, I've got this. Another one says these two. When someone says, my whole class is struggling with that, then we still say, well, name one or two that you're interested in. And then we open up to say, what could we do? And that language is really important. It's not what will we do, it's what could we do. And now, Chrissy, you jump in with one of the things I do in my classroom is I have students underline with a highlighter, yellow step one, orange step two, and green step three. And someone else says, oh, I do something like that, but I actually do it right up on my whiteboard so that students can see that. Someone goes, I wonder if. What if we were to take a problem and like physically cut it apart so that the students could see step one, step two, step three? And then someone else says, what I get my students to do is think through the steps, and then they turn to a partner to share. And then I purposefully pick out students who I know are struggling to ask them to describe back the steps. This is all great ideas, differentiated strategies that we can try. Once we've had a chance to brainstorm, we come back and say, all right, Curtis, for the student for Michelle, what's one thing? And I go, I really like Chrissy's idea of actually physically cutting up the problem. I hadn't even thought of that. That's a great, put me down. And we go, awesome. When do you think you could do that by? I said, I'm going to try it next week. I'll need the weekend just to get a few things ready. So pop me down for next week. Awesome. We assign action, and then we go to Chrissy. Chrissy, who's a student that you identified, and what's one thing you're going to try? So the idea within this is it's highly solutions focused and exceptionally action oriented for it. And no one in the room is saying, Curtis, you should do this. I'm still in control. And it leads to some coaching mechanisms that I'll talk about here for you. But from your perspective, where I know you're looking at coaching from an overall PD sense, team meetings, and then individual. In the team meetings, the beauty of this is it then leads to both. It could be, I love Chrissy's idea, but I need some help with that. Well, now you've just got an excellent opportunity to say, I'll come join you in your room and I'll model it for you, if you like. Or when the rest of the room goes, that's an interesting idea, Chrissy. How do you do that? Where you go, oh, this is a great opportunity for us all to learn a particular strategy. It feeds both of those opportunities for you. Sorry, I've shared a lot, but I hope it's given a description of that particular meeting layer. We found by adding that, we often say you reduce your number of meetings by adding one more because you're just building capacity all the time.
I really like that change that you made. I think that was a really good point. And having other people say, you know, I have everybody have these are not uncommon issues. The majority of
No.
things that we see, we're going to see them in multiple classrooms in the same grade or in same content area. So I like that you have had people say, oh, I do have a student who's struggling that, because then everybody is invested not only in providing something, but in getting something from everybody else. And I think
Absolutely.
that develops that collaboration and it lowers the defenses a little bit because, you know, it's not just Peggy going, oh, my kid can't do this and I'm struggling in this area. Everybody else says, oh, we're also struggling in that too. You're not the only one.
Absolutely. And through that, I don't have the potential embarrassment or even the thinking in my head of I'm the only one that's struggling with this. Because we often say in the collaborative team meeting, everyone is an expert and everyone is a learner. And I don't care what your role is or how many years background you have. Nobody has this profession perfected to a point that there's not something new that I can learn. The interesting thing is I'm in my 28th year. I do hundreds of these meetings facilitating, modeling it for people. Everyone, I walk out with a new website, a new resource, a new way of thinking. I hear something new every time that I've never heard before.
There's so much. There's so
Oh.
much. And that's, I think, part of the problem that teachers have is sifting through all that information. But this is like stuff that actual people on your own campus, right down the hallway, are doing. So it's not as
100%.
unlikely to work. You know, it's been tested.
The beauty of this, and I think it'll be really interesting for your audience, is we had a situation where we had a instructional coach within our building, and she could easily get into some classrooms, and it was harder in others. Or even when principal said, thou shalt, there was still a resistance that would come in. By having her in these meetings, when she would offer an idea, for somebody to say, I'm not sure about that, I could come in and take a look for you. And then it started to bring down people's defenses because she's not seen as the instructional coach at a higher level. She's just one more teacher who has some great expertise to be able to address. And this led to this idea of distributive coaching. Is now a good time to jump into that,
Yes, go
Chrissy?
for it. Yes, perfect.
Okay. So the idea of this is, of course, the instructional coach is critical in this work. And I loved an episode I heard from your podcast with Todd Whitaker when he talks about, I want that person to be a hero within the school, for people to see them as a hero. I thought that was excellent. The idea is in these team meetings, the instructional coach is powerful, but so is everybody else. And so the idea of distributive coaching is everybody has something they could contribute or share or teach another colleague. And this is where we see huge trust start getting built in our instructional coach when teacher A says, I really like teacher B's idea, but I need some help. And the instructional coach can then jump in to say, you know what? Why don't I grab your kids tomorrow for just 20 minutes so you can go over to this person's classroom to view, or I could go there, help this. So it's not that the instructional coach has to be seen as the holder of the universal master teacher's toolbox, but they're facilitating the sharing because we want to get to a place that the room is always more experienced than any one individual. But by doing that, then it still allows instructional coach the opportunity to say, yeah, I can cover off for this person to try this. I can also come in and help you show this. And it's now there's a little less threat that comes along with that because I'm not coming there because there's a deficit in your teaching. I'm coming there because we've identified an issue in relation to student learning. Just that subtle little shift becomes so incredible here for us. And as a teacher who's a little bit not quite on board with the coach coming in to help me, but think of what happens when the coach says, "Wow, that's powerful what you've just said. Why don't I cover you for a bit so you can show this other person?" You're building up huge respect for one another and reliance on one another, which can only help just drive the power of the coach further. And the other thing that I think is important is an instructional coach saying in a meeting, "You know, here's a strategy that I've learned can work really effectively," and they've said it in a room of six people. Well, that becomes much more powerful than if I went into each of those six classrooms individually, not just from a time disbursement perspective, but also it's almost that train the trainer kind of idea of if I can show this one person or share it out with others, and then the next time when I'm not in that room, that person can say, "You know, Chrissy came in, worked with me a couple months ago on this. Let me show you how it works." For you're just distributing your expertise so much further.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That you can kind of, people can kind of be like commercials,
Yeah.
to say, I mean, yeah, this actually worked. I did try this out and it worked. I also really like this is a while back, but you mentioned kind of like the commitment piece at the end of your meeting, where you're basically saying, make a commitment. What are you committing to? What is that going to look like? And I think that's a really good way to, people struggle to bridge the things that we talk about in one room back into their classrooms.
Yeah.
Have to help them build a bridge. And I think that's a really good way to build a bridge. Say, when do you expect to be able to try this out? And then you're going to let us know how it went. So you're
Well,
expecting.
and there's also an opening there that's really powerful that when I say, "I'm going to try this particular strategy," for the coach to jump and say, "Do you need any help with that?
Yes.
Can I help you with that in any way?" And now it's in my wheelhouse to say, "No, I think I'm okay. I'll let you know if I have a struggle," or, "Yeah, I would love that
Yes.
if you were there to
And the
be able
coach
to
has
help
so many
support me."
different modes of providing that support. Like you mentioned, they can go visit a colleague, they can model, they can help them look up something, they can provide a resource. The book that I'm actually working on having published right now is about leveraging your coaching opportunities into
Yeah.
future coaching work. And sometimes we miss those opportunities because we go, okay, great. Well, now you know what you're going to do. Awesome. Let me know if you need any help. But let me know if you need any help doesn't ever get anybody to ask you for help.
That's right.
You've got to be
100%.
like present. You have to listen and say, okay, I hear this opportunity and I'm going to offer this support in the moment. I'm not going to wait for them to tell me. I'm going to do the work.
And this meeting that I'm describing affords that completely.
Yeah, I hear that. That's great. So then what I'm hearing is so many different ways, but I would love for you to elaborate on building a collaborative culture that supports teachers in working together, because you're already doing so much just in having everybody be sort of leveling the playing field, because everybody's contributing, that student who is struggling in the same thing. But what are some of the things that you do to build that culture, so you don't have as many teachers who are like, no, none of my kids struggle with that, or well, I just did what the curriculum said, and then they just kind of don't really want to continue sharing authentically about what they're doing. What kinds of things do you do there?
Oh my goodness, so much, Chrissy, but I'll highlight some of the keys. And one of the things that helps that collaborative culture, and it's that second foundational component that I spoke of data and evidence, that when we have solid data and evidence that's available, when a person says, "Nah, my kids are doing great. I'm awesome." I found for myself as a leader, it was easy. Sorry, easy is the wrong word. It was supported when I said, "Actually, our data says that we're seeing these three kids struggling. So, what are you seeing as a key concern within that?" Now, it might take some teasing to get that out, but the data can help surface. And even through that meeting structure that I described, it's not about anyone's lack of teaching expertise, even though we're building everyone's expertise through it. It's about this student is here and here's a struggle I have. So the process itself starts creating vulnerability. That not only is it acceptable for me to say, I'm struggling in this and I'm not quite sure where to go next. It's expected. And we often say that that's how we get to that true culture of collaboration when people are not only willing, but see it as a cultural norm to be able to say, I'm not sure what to do and I need some help, but it's not that I'm handing it off. It's not that I'm saying, I don't know what to do, so it's your problem now, Chrissy. It's having that high degree of collective efficacy of I know what I'm doing that can have an impact, and when I'm not seeing impact, I'm looking for other ways. So something as simple in that meeting that I described, but now we see it that gets played out in every meeting, is taking that short time for celebrations. And it's not just a I'd like to celebrate all of our junior high students. They've done so well adapting to the new flex block that we've put in place. We want to get into specifics to say, all right, who? And then the most important question, what did you do
Yeah, how did
that
your
led to
project
that
work?
success?
Yeah.
Doing that over and over again helps reinforce what Hattie has told us or is described as collective efficacy. Jenny Donahue talks about this as well. And we know what an important aspect it is, or how critically important it is to impact student achievement. And then being able to put clear structures in place. And I often joke when working with schools around things like norms. And when I was a beginning leader, I thought norms must be for schools that where they don't like each other very much or they don't know each other. Our school's not like that. We don't need norms. And yeah, we didn't need norms when the conversations were surface level, when we were just sharing and helping and jumping in where we could. But when we started to get into challenging conversations and people started to ask me, what do you do in your classroom when this happens? We needed norms. We needed to put that in place. I also didn't realize that having meetings where there were roles assigned became critically important. Have we clearly indicated the facilitator, and does everyone in the room know what that person's job is? Who's taking our notes? And do we have those projected up so everyone can see? Do we have a timekeeper? And then we see schools that start infusing different roles, because what that does is starts to ensure that when we come together to meet, and I'll back this up, anytime someone says, man, I wish we could get rid of meetings, to me, that's foolhardy. I think what they're meaning is, I wish we could get rid of unproductive meetings. I can get behind that. But meetings are critical if you're collaborating. You have to. And so that whole idea of ensuring that that meeting is well structured, and by the rules, everyone has responsibility for its success. It's not left up to one person. And one time when I have to facilitate, the next time we meet and I'm not facilitating, I have a whole new appreciation for the person who's trying to keep their colleagues in line. My phone's now away because it really was difficult last time when I was facilitating. All these things lead to that culture of collaboration. And I'm a big believer that if you create structure, focus, and clarity in your formalized collaborative times, the conversations in informal times goes to a different place. And I saw this school over school over school. The conversation in the staff room changes. In the workroom, it sounds different. Out in the parking lot, it sounds different. It's no longer about venting. It's about, I'm struggling with this. What do you think I could do? What's something that you've tried that's worked? There's just a different feel in those schools.
Yeah, I like that. It's like a collaborative problem solving. They're sharing and finding
100%.
solutions. And yeah, that's beautiful.
And to me, I think that's all about the systems that you put in place. I do not think it's about hiring. And I don't think it's about just hoping that it'll happen. It's about creating conditions, expectations, habits that we put into place. I'm a big believer that our profession becomes better when it's collaborative and seen as a collective endeavor, where I think too many schools across North America still reside in the I close my door and do my best.
Yes, that little teacher saying it, Whenever I was a teacher, and I share this on the podcast all the time, we had a lot of autonomy, a lot. And I loved it as a teacher. It was great. I enjoyed that. However, it was great for me individually, not good for a school, right? Not good for kids who are moving up in different classrooms and getting wildly different experiences depending on what room they happen to be assigned to. It was it So we see teachers who use that, well, you do what's best, close your door and do what's best for kids. Well, that implies that you always know what's best in every moment.
100%.
Yeah, and it
I
stresses me out.
would also, I would argue too that collaboration and autonomy are not two separate things. We can have both. Michael Fullan talks about that, the paradox of these two can coexist. And for someone who, I'll go back to your comment of it was great for me. I've found oftentimes when teachers get into these really focused, well, the schools we work with to establish collaborative response, no one's saying that you have to follow this script in your classroom. No one's taking away your autonomy, but we're creating some consistency, some structures, and the opportunities for you to not only have the chance to say, I'm not sure what to do, but it's expected that you're going to say that. We have schools that say, I actually feel more free as a classroom teacher now because I know this, that when I hit a wall, I'm not alone. I have layers of teams that I'm going to go to, and I all of a sudden have a colleague who's on the other side of the school teaching something very different from me, but I was in a collaborative team meeting with them 6 months ago, and I know they have a great understanding around this particular child I'm working with right now. I'm making that connection, and this work just creates so many robust connections between people that we hear about the epidemic of teacher wellness, teacher burnout,
Yes,
for it. We see less instances of that when schools are engaged in this type of work because I'm not alone. I always have a team that's with me.
I agree. I think that I was very comfortable. There were people I could go to ask for support and help. We had created a team in my grade level, but there were no structures to help us do this. So it was all whatever we figured out to do. There was no support. And I think that people get used to doing things completely on their own. And then whenever we try to start systems like this, they feel like we're telling them, oh, you have to do it exactly in this way. And so I love the piece that you have in your process where teachers actually say, out of all these ideas, this is what I can do. Or I heard all these ideas and it made me think of this other thing. And I can do that, and maybe it's not even something somebody specifically shared, but just having that dialogue. Stimulated an idea, a different idea.
Chrissy, the interesting thing with this is through the structures and processes, as you create psychological safety within that, we see teachers when first engaging in this process where they'll reach for low-hanging fruit. They'll say, okay, I was planning to do this anyway as my next step, so put me down as that action. But what we see through this is people start to stretch. We start to hear, sometimes we don't hear it in the meeting. Sometimes we see it after the meeting where someone goes and reaches out and said, you know that website you shared in that meeting? Can you show me what that looks like? I know we've shown it before and I didn't want to sound foolish with my principal in the room, but what do you see? But then people reach the point of it's not foolish to be able to say, I really am intrigued by that idea, but I need help. I need help to be able to implement that. And that's, to me, that's what we want in this profession, is to have the safety to say, I need help. And it's not a that I expect anyone to throw me a life preserver. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking to build my expertise so I can attend to this child, because that's what most of us got into this for, is I want to make a difference for kids. And if I have multiple ways to do that, hooray.
Yes, I think the biggest disservice we do to teachers is they start teaching and we stick them in a room by themselves with a bunch of kids and they don't see anybody else teach and they don't talk to anybody else and nobody sees them teach. Maybe your principal comes in once a year or three times a year to do walkthroughs or your formal evaluation, but that's it. And so whatever you figure out is what you figure out. And that usually comes from the framework of your own education and what that was like, and so that's not always great. But we have what is it, the survivor fallacy or something, where we think, well, I made it through, so it must have worked just fine, right?
100%.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this is where I get so excited for your audience is if I'm in a school without the systems and structures put in place to collaborate, it can be difficult and isolating work as an instructional coach because I know you know from your experience that in a school, there's going to be teachers who can't wait for you to come in. There's going to be teachers that'll need a little nudge or a push, and there will be others who know I'm good, even though you know that's not the case.
They
But
can't wait for you to leave.
you put that same instructional coach into a school with highly aligned and clearly defined systems and structures and processes in place. Oh my goodness, it's like pouring gasoline on a fire. It can just have such tremendous impact. And it's in those places that we see instructional coaches just, I have so many different avenues and opportunities to impact instruction, which helps kids, which is the whole reason I'm in this to begin with.
So, what I want to get into in the last couple of minutes here, I want to know about a little bit about the structures and a little bit about the roles, because I think these are things that help us keep them structured, right? It's making sure that these meetings are purposeful, that people don't walk away going, that could have been an email. You know, we want it to be purposeful and people to know what they're walking away with, and the structure is supportive of that. So, can you talk a little bit about the roles that are helpful for these collaborative team meetings? You mentioned a few of them, but how you kind of assign them or how that works. And then also some structures that are really valuable.
You bet. And I'm going to also provide a resource, a free PDF for your listeners. It's called Five or Transform Your Team Meetings. It includes five considerations that are, I think, essential for every team meeting. I'll make sure that link is in there or sent to you to be able to
Perfect.
include. In that, we talk about, is there a clearly established agenda slash notes taking document? And we give some strategies for what that puts. When there's a clear agenda that when people come together, they know exactly where we're going, the times, everything within it. Really, really powerful. I already mentioned norms. Having norms in place and not just words on a page or somebody in a monotone voice reads them out at the start. We're going to pick one that we will focus on today. So one of our norms is we will be solutions focused. So today, Chrissy, I'd love for you, in honor of that norm, on a post-it note, keep track of how many times you hear the words what if. We use what if when we're trying to think out solutions. Let us know how we did. We're aiming for 10 within this conversation. So it's practicing these norms so that they're not just words on a page. They're actually, this is what we believe. Or this is how we expect each other to behave in these conversations. And I don't mean that in a punitive way. I mean just clear expectations for
Yeah,
us.
it makes sense.
Without it,
Clear
we're working off
expectations.
assumptions.
Yes, clear expectations actually supports people from devolving into, to giving people the benefit of the doubt and support, and telling people whenever they've strayed, they have a kind and reasonable way to bring them back, because they can say, you know what, this is what we're working on today. So let's really try to refocus ourselves in this way. Without those expectations, it's harder actually to bring people back whenever they're kind of, moving in a different direction.
It absolutely is. We also have a free how to create team norms guide that I'll include to share out as well. To me, if you have a team meeting on a regular basis, you need norms established. The idea of roles. We have on our website jigsawlearning.ca a number of different resources around creating roles. I mentioned the three key ones I think every meeting has. Who's the facilitator? And it might not always be the formal leader. When schools get really good in these processes, we can come and say, who'd like to facilitate today? Because the facilitator is not just running us through the agenda, they're listening deeply. They're hearing, they're paraphrasing back what they think they're hearing. They're making sure that others are getting drawn into the conversation. When I facilitate, I often have everyone's name on a piece of paper beside me, and I'm ticking off when I've heard from them. And then I'm jumping in to say, Tony, I haven't heard your thoughts yet. What are you thinking? around this. I mentioned the recorder or the note taker, the timekeeper, I think is critically important. Nothing does injustice more to feeling good about a meeting than having a 30-minute time limit that takes 75. And we find once people put time parameters, it actually increases the productivity in their meeting because, okay, we have 8 minutes. Let's get at it. Let's
Can you
go.
break up your agenda by minute?
You do 100%.
Yeah, I like
Yeah,
that.
to be able to say, and this is another key, and I mentioned it already, starting with celebrations. And even in the agenda document, it will say, celebration, what did we do that led to that success? And having it right on the agenda that it says 5 minutes. Timekeeper, start us for 5 minutes. Hold up a finger when we're down to one, just so we know it's almost time to move on. Starting with celebrations is massive, and it doesn't have to take a lot of time here for us. Coming back then to those roles, we often see schools that create roles to add to their meetings. So a role we often see is the interrupter. And it comes, schools say, whenever someone gets off track, it's the interrupter's job to jump in and say, okay, what are we going to do about it? Or I saw one school where they had just a bell that the interrupter had, and they would just ding when someone was off task. And no one was offended because we knew it's that person's job to do that. Another role that I loved was the norm analyst. And it's that person's job at the end of the meeting to reflect and report back out to everybody. How did we do on the one norm that we selected? We said that we would be all voices matter. It's my job at the end to report back how I think we did on that, or even what's one instance where I saw that being put into place. These they seem small, and we often have school staff say it feels awkward and mechanical when we're putting these in place to start. In time, they're just how we operate, and they lead to such incredible productivity. Again, I often, when I hear a school say, we don't need those, we collaborate great already, my response is, trust me, try them. If you think you're collaborating great now, just wait to what you're going to be able to accomplish when this is put in place. It will take you to levels you had no idea you could get to as a team.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing all this information. I think it's really interesting for people to look into, to kind of take a look at their teams and say, what are we really accomplishing during this meeting? Do we need to maybe change our structure and find a way that will help us be more collaborative and more supportive of kids? So thank you so much for everything.
Oh, very welcome, Chrissy. It's been
How
a
can
pleasure.
people keep learning for you?
Our website is the best place to go. It's jigsawlearning.ca. Right on the front page, there is a free overview of collaborative response that can give you more idea of what I've kind of teased at through our episode here. We also have a text that came out from Corwin as well. There's right on the front page, there's a free download of the introduction. The beauty of that introductory chapter is, A, you get to preview the book before deciding if it's something that would interest you. But there's also a link in that free introductory chapter to a companion website that has all sorts of templates, videos, resources that you can access without having to get into the book. But I'd love for your listeners to check out the book. It's had incredible impact for schools and just really honors and empowers where I started this episode at, of honors and empowers what I think is the most critical resource that we have, and that's the expertise in the building.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing about that. I'm sure people are going to look it up. And best of luck.
Thank you so much, Chrissy. It's been an honor.
I know your brain is just bubbling with so many things after that conversation. I really love talking with Curtis. He's super knowledgeable in this area, and so I hope you guys check out the resources. I think it'll be really helpful as you think about how you can build some of these structures into your school and how you can support teachers in your differentiated team meetings in ways that really reach their students. Again, you can grab the free action plan guide. You can go to buzzingwithmissb.com/action plan. It'll help you set up your three-tiered approach towards your school support. And then next week, we're talking to my friend Casey Watts about working with diverse PLC teams. This is one of the areas that coaches really struggle with. It's getting our teachers to work together and collaborate whenever they come from super different backgrounds, very diverse, maybe approaches to their work, different ways of thinking about teaching, different personal backgrounds. So I'm excited to share that episode with you next week. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching.